Sunday, May 26th, the greatest spectacle in racing returns. The Indianapolis 500 on NBC and Peacock. 33 of the world's fastest drivers go head-to-head for a chance to kiss the bricks, taste the milk, and claim their place in racing history. Experience the drama, the pageantry, the tradition. Live from the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, the Indy 500. Sunday, May 26th on NBC and Peacock. Or listen on Sirius XM NBC Sports Channel.
Hello and welcome to the Two Robbies podcast, your destination for in-depth discussion and analysis of the Premier League and the Champions League. I'm Robbie Musto, he's Robbie Earl, and here are today's topics. Cristiano Ronaldo bails out Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and Man United yet again. Man City breaking the halftime deadlock against Bruges thanks to 3 second-half goals. Liverpool outclassing 10-man Atletico Madrid at Anfield. Chelsea taking all 3 points in Sweden against Malmo. Nuno out and Antonio Conte in at Spurs. Is this the right move for Spurs and for Conte? And what next for Newcastle United after Unai Emery declines an offer from the Magpies? That's what we've got coming up in today's show. Okay, Rob, we'll get on to the Tottenham chat a little later. Of course, it's another midweek of Champions League action. We had a good look at both games on the Tuesday and the Wednesday. We're recording this on the Wednesday after the Liverpool game and the Man City games. Let's go back to yesterday, my friend. And the first game I'm going to talk about is Atalanta 2, Manchester United 2. Wow. Another one of those games, Rob, that United conceded first, struggled for large periods, particularly in the first half. But that man, I think he's a man. I'm not sure he's human, but Cristiano Ronaldo again with some sensational football, sensational finishing to save the blushes of the manager and to keep them absolutely in the group to qualify for the knockout phases.
Yeah, to be honest, Rob, I think you've started this conversation off wrongly, though, I have to say. Atalanta 2, Ronaldo United 2, because it's almost like without this guy, Rob, we wouldn't be talking in the same way. They wouldn't be sitting with 7 points in the Champions League. They wouldn't be competing to go through the group stages that, you know, we've seen in Premier League action. They wouldn't have the points they have. I mean, it's almost unbearable to think where this team would be without him, Rob. When you add to that Rafael Varane, I'm hearing reports, could be out for up to a month with a hamstring. So an important player at the back missing. The reliance on Ronaldo at the front. And the two goals, the Ronaldo performance, the Ronaldo headlines, that shouldn't take away from what was another disappointing performance from Manchester United. We can continue to say how well Ronaldo's doing. We continue to say that, you know, he's using things, maybe that. But when you break the game down, we're not far away from where we were pre the Spurs victory, that you still don't quite know what you're going to get from Manchester United, Rob. Even with the change of system.
Yeah, I mean, they stuck with the three at the back to start the game. Victor Lindelof, Rob, is out with a knock as well. So there was no centre-back on the bench to come in and stick with the three at the back. But it was three at the back. It was your four across midfield. So Pogba this time alongside McTominay. And then like a split three, really, of Rashford to the left-hand side, Ronaldo to the centre, and Bruno Fernandes to the right-hand side. And there's all these options that they can do now in this system. So that's how they started, and defensively looked okay, looked strong early on, but there was no football, there was no build-up play. They're very much on the back foot, just trying to fill spaces and fill holes. The insurance is there. Paul Pogba, we'll get on and talk about Rob, made a couple of mistakes, but he was helped out by three centre-backs instead of two, which obviously left a little later in the game. So the system was the same to start with, but it quickly changed. It's the same every single time, Rob. There's no point really going over.
No,
I mean, the game is exactly the same. It's exactly the same.
We've all known. And again, the lack of control, the lack of things we've talked about, mean that Manchester United are at risk in every game they play. There's no comfort position with Manchester United in the manner that they play. that we see with other top sides. And Atalanta looked often more dangerous. Their play was better. Zapata, the big centre forward, terrorised them at times, gave them all kinds of problems with his power running, with his skill, with his goal threat in behind. I thought when even with the three, he was playing down that left-hand channel between Wan-Bissaka and Eric Bailly. I think it's Bailly's first start, something like first or second start all season, so he's not had much football. It looked a little bit rusty. I think it showed. We saw in the goals that were conceded. But, I mean, it's a satisfactory result, Rob, but another kind of worrying day for United in the bigger picture of things, of where this football club is. And I've heard Ollie sort of say that, you know, he's comparing Ronaldo to Michael Jordan. So I'm assuming on that basis he's comparing himself to Phil Jackson. I'm not quite sure.
You've got to have the coach. I mean, Ronaldo's goals, Rob, and the first goal of his is a lovely build-up play for Man United. And, you know, you watch them struggle. We all know that they struggle a lot of times in games. And then a little bit of brilliance between the three of them. Mason Greenwood's first-time ball, the little back heel from Bruno, the touch and the finish from Ronaldo. I mean, it's a lovely, lovely goal. And of course, Ronaldo's second goal as well. Out of nowhere, you can't believe that he's doing this stuff, really. But, you know, just on other players, Rob, big performers. And I know that Paul Pogba was called out again by Paul Scholes, the former United midfield player, on television, talking about his performance in midfield. Maguire, Pogba, Rashford. Now, big players at the football club.
Why?
I mean, maybe Maguire, we can talk about his injury. Did he come back too early into the first team? But Rashford let's just start with Rashford, Rob. And I know he's been out for a little while, but is Man United going to see, or when are they going to see the best of Marcus Rashford on a consistent basis?
I think part of that question is, Rob, that Marcus Rashford hasn't consistently played well for probably a season or so. We've seen him bits and we see cameos for Manchester United. You see cameos for England. He's gone from an England starter, guaranteed, to probably now being on the outside of the first 11. He's had injury problems. We know all about the work he's doing off field, and we've talked and praised him for some of the brilliant work he's doing away from football. But we also got to talk about Marcus Rashford, the footballer, and be honest and objective. And at the moment, it's not quite delivering. Now, I don't know if he's one of those individuals, Rob. I think he's still only just 24 years of age. So we have to also take that into consideration. He's had a lot of football, done a lot of things in an early stage. But I don't know if he's one of those footballers, Rob, who almost needs to find his position, play in his position and get some rhythm there. I played with some players who, when you move them around, they never quite settle. They do a bit of this and a bit of that. And I was a few players who I used to think need a position, need to play, get a rhythm, get some numbers, play in a certain role. Now, I know the modern game is very different and centre forwards and attackers are more fluid, but I never quite get the sense he's a good partner of Marcus Rashford. He's not particularly, I don't think, that good in a two. The best we've seen of him is when he's from that left-hand side coming in off to his right foot, which at the moment was a spot for Jadon Sancho in the new setup. I'm not sure. So I just feel he's there's no set pattern for Marcus Rashford, and I don't think that's helping him.
I don't think he's getting coached well enough, Rob. I would expect more. I think he's the type of player, Rob, that needs to be really taught intricacies of an attacking player. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer should be the guy to do that. We are not seeing it after his two or three years in charge. We are not seeing Marcus Rashford reach a level that we've not seen before. Last coach, Jose Mourinho, not really the type to spend time with Marcus Rashford. All he's doing is throwing his arms up when Rashford makes a mistake, not getting taught there. Before that, Van Gaal, maybe. And again, this, of course, is on the player to learn and figure it out for himself. But I think Marcus Rashford would benefit from a really smart, intelligent, patient, teaching coach to take his game to another level, so he gets more consistent, so that he doesn't have to find the game. The game comes to him. Positions he takes up. I don't know. Lots of small things. Like, we're just seeing an inconsistent Rashford. Like, the team is inconsistent. I just wonder, with a different coach, whether it's a Pochettino, I don't know, a thoughtful coach, Rob, might bring his game forward. And any, do you think there's any validity in that?
There's absolutely validity in that. And he's probably, listen, are we going to see it under Ollie? Maybe he's not that type. Although he was a striker, I'm not sure he's that type, whether in his play, his former play, or as a coach. As you said, some of that also falls on a 24-year-old now who should start to be figuring things out.
Yeah, he should be.
But I get your point in terms of that rigour of going through training, learning where positions, knowing where to stand up. Ronaldo around there should be helpful on that. But, you know, it comes down as also to Marcus Rashford. If he feels that, or his game isn't going, then between John McKenna, who's involved, and Michael Carrick, who's involved, and Mike Phelan, who's involved. You know, I heard when was it Arteta was at Man City and took Sterling for work. And
they said, he got a lot
out of Sterling. That sort of way, he's going to go out some one-on-one work in the afternoon. You know, again, you look at that backroom staff, I'm not sure how they work and who's the guy in there who can do that. But, you know, it's a really valid point you make. Maybe he needs that little bit of rigour, because you've got a top class 15 to 20 goal Premier League scorer in your ranks. But at the moment, you're not quite sure what you're going to get from him. And the disappointments at times are part of that lack of consistency. It's not a team that relies on its style of play. So the individuals are going to have to do it. Their style of play is going to have to get you out the mire. And at the moment, it's Ronaldo's finishing. But beyond that, we're starting to, you know, it's starting to be a struggle.
Just before we move on, Rob, to other games, let's just touch on Paul Pogba. Played in the middle of the park, which, you know, I think this weekend, Rob, we're going to do some little tactics session about the United's new system and what it means for certain players. And there's no question that it can help Paul Pogba with his positioning. And his role in the team, because there's three centre-backs behind him. There's an extra insurance guy behind him for if he does make mistakes or he doesn't get back and defensively, which he should do, by the way, but can't guarantee that. He had one error that nearly cost a goal. He had another error that led to a really dangerous ball coming in. And we've done both on him, mate. I think we've supported him. You know, and we've given him a hard time when we feel it's right. Other times we like give him a bit of a break. I remember you recently saying that he's always seems to be the whipping boy and always seems to be the player that people go to, and he's easy guy to criticize. On the back of this one, Rob, has he helped his case, or was it another disappointing performance?
It didn't help his case at all, Rob. He looked disinterested is probably too strong a word, but he didn't look like he was up for a Champions League game, Rob. It looked like it was a training game to him, rolling casual. His foot and taking extra touches and being casual. And Paul Scholes, I saw the interview that he called him out, and we know that you know there's a certain number of the ex-Man United players who seem to want to jump on him. But I thought in a number of things, Scholes was right. And one thing that he said is, which I thought was interesting, when he was at Juve, he was surrounded by a lot of experienced players who prompted him, who got onto him, who made him get to the top of his game. And he said, I'm not sure he's got those kind of players round him at Manchester United. And so he goes into games a little bit kind of relaxed and a little bit loose, and I'll roll my foot over it, which you wouldn't get away with in proper, well-constructed, experienced teams. People would be on him, Rob.
And managers would be on him, Rob.
Yeah, managers, you're right.
Antonio Conte. We're going to talk about Antonio Conte a little later. Antonio Conte had him at Juventus, brought him through. I mean, can you imagine Antonio Conte watching Paul Pogba try to hold people off and roll his foot on the ball?
But is the point that Paul Pogba wouldn't do that with Antonio Conte?
Absolutely, the point. Yeah, because he'd probably do it once. He'd go absolutely crazy, nuts at him, Antonio Conte. Then you wouldn't think he'd do it again. I mean, there are experienced players in this team, Rob, like Ronaldo now. Bruno, even Edison Cavani. I mean, the players that can absolutely give him a hard time. Shouldn't they be doing more? Or
Although Cavani hasn't played that much. Bruno, I think looks like he gets around people, puts a fire up them. I almost get the sense that Pogba's so big, world global star, yeah. World Cup winner.
They let him get on with it.
A little bit hard to do that. What you're not getting is back in the day, Robin, and I hate when we do the back in the day stuff, but it's pertinent that when Steve Bruce, the player, was playing at Manchester United, and he was probably the least skillful player that Manchester United had, let me tell you, he put a rocket up Keane, Ince, Beckham, Giggs, Scholes, who were all playing at the time, and he didn't mind that he wasn't the greatest player. His role as captain was to make sure they were doing the job. And that's where I'd like to see a Harry Maguire step forward. Now, he's having a tougher time of it for himself, that he probably is thinking, you know what, I just got to get my own game in order. Not, I ain't got time to even worry about anybody else, which leads us to the Maguire situation, Rob. And right now, in terms of form, Harry Maguire would be close to being droppable.
Yeah, it seems to me that he has to have a ton of games, a lot of rhythm, and then you start seeing him play at his best. Anything that knocks him off of that, and it seems to take him a while to get back and get his feeling for the game. And yeah, mistakes after mistakes. But just quickly, it is back to the manager. We talk about players not having to go at Paul Pogba or even the captain, but it does come down to the manager. The manager's got to be controlling and try and get the best out of these players. But Ronaldo did it again, mate. I mean, that's three. I think the last three Champions League games, he scored
seven points.
Yeah, I mean, it's all for points.
The seven points they've got are basically down to him. Ronaldo United.
Yeah.
I'm ready to go. Streaming now only on Peacock. Five rich and famous international soccer stars. They have everything except love.
I think girls in the past have gone for me because of what I've got.
That's why we're going undercover.
We're setting them up with single American women.
They don't know we are famous. They don't know we are rich.
And they'll have to hide their true identity.
What do you need for work?
I'm an ad salesman.
Oh, God. What am I doing?
Love Undercover. New series streaming now only on Peacock.
All right. Well, they're still going in the Champions League anyway. Straight through. To today's game, Rob. Next on our list is Manchester City 4, Club Bruges 1.
Yeah.
Now, this happened today, same time. I watched the Liverpool game. Give me a report. How they look. Yeah.
So I got a good look at this one. So City, Club Bruges, they beat them, I think, 4-0 in the first game. You're expecting them to kick on. They got the first goal after Plamel Foden gets the goal. And then a few minutes later, a little bit of sloppiness with their defending. Really didn't defend a ball into the box, and it comes in and deflects off John Stones into the back, and that 1-1. And then there was a little period of City not being clinical and clean with the passing. I think we've seen it a couple of times, the City, where it's like, oh, it's a little bit slow, a little bit allowing the opposition to get behind the ball. And we got into half-time at 1-1. And I would imagine Pep would have had a few words to say about the speed of play, about the movement, about combinations that weren't really there. And then we saw what we expect from City. Three goals in the second half, better goals. All the three second half goals, well, most virtually all the goals were almost courtesy of what you'd expect from City. Somebody getting to the byline, cutting it back in a 6-yard tap-in. So, you know, Foden got one, Mahrez got one, Sterling got one, Jesus got one. So they got the result. I mean, Bruges were never really serious contenders to win the game. I thought a couple of interesting things, Rob, were the timings of substitutes. So Jesus came on for Grealish in around the 68th minute. Sterling came on for Mahrez just around that time as well. And then Bernardo Silva came off, Kevin De Bruyne came on. So I got the sense there was a... Certainly, once the game was won, there was a thought towards the Manchester derby at the weekend. That Pep was looking at things there. It kind of feels like good City are going to score goals and beat teams. And the days when we talk about that football just isn't right, that lack of striker might be something that might come to bite them, Rob, over the course of a season in Champions League or in the Premier League.
Yeah. I mean, that result puts them in good shape. I mean, it's still a tight group right now. Man City, 9 points. Second is PSG with 8 points. Bruges, third with 4 points. And Leipzig, somewhat surprisingly, just with 1 point. I mean, I looked across. I've got games going on a little bit. And I just saw it was 1-1 for a little while. I thought, wow, I might have to focus on the Man City. I thought it might be a story there.
Yeah.
But soon after that, Obviously, they scored, and that was it.
Yeah.
So just taking, let's go forward, mate. Manchester United versus Man City. Coverage begins on Saturday, 7 a.m. Eastern time on NBCSN, the Manchester Derby. Let's just get straight into the odds, mate. I've got some odds here from our friends, PointsBet. So Man City, not surprisingly, a favourite. So Man City to win is minus 143. The draw is plus 290. And the outsider of the, this bet is Man United win at plus 360.
Is quite big odds in a two-horse race, no?
It is quite big odds. And I think we know that Man United are capable of spectacular moments. We see it almost every week. Just given what we know now, Rob, after you know the last couple of days and the last couple of weekends in the Premier League, is it that close? Do you fancy Man United can go there and win? I mean, what we don't know what to expect from Manchester United.
Yes, at Old Trafford, yeah.
Yes,
United at home, yeah.
Yeah. Maybe without Rafael Varane.
Yeah, and without Varane.
Lindelof. I mean, if Lindelof's not fit, I mean, we're going to do a lot of talking about the three-man defensive line. Yeah. If Lindelof's not fit, they haven't got the players to do it. Maguire. It's the only two centre-backs.
Is a worry.
Unless they put a Matic back there, Rob, as a, you know, something like that, or even maybe a Luke Shaw.
Luke Shaw can play left side. Yeah, he's done that before now.
Maybe.
Yeah, actually, it's not an option. Generally, I have to say, Ollie's been a man with a plan, hasn't he, in these big games? He's come up with something. He's generally sat deep. He's had his pace in the wide areas. He's hurt teams. I can remember the likes of City. I remember Spurs game where he's pulled something out. I mean, it's interesting. So we've got this possible change for United. We talk about three at the back and how that might suit them. We've got the false nine from City that on good days is great, but on other days, I mean, three Premier League games now, City failed to score, Rob. I think they only failed to score in three all last season. So it shows that's going to be part of the conversation if City don't win games. My feeling is City will possess so much ball, they're going to test that back line. And depending on how that back line holds up, I can see City creating enough chances to possibly go and win the game.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it's all about. I mean, if they had Varane playing, Rob, and they played with this 3/5 at the back, because it will be 5 at the back, and it'd probably be 5-4-1, because that's basically what it looked like in the Atalanta game, Rob.
Yeah.
You know, when they didn't have the ball, they dropped right back. And I think that could frustrate City. And we know they've got the players on the break, Ronaldo, maybe Rashford, Greenwood, Bruno, of course, to hurt them on the break. The other factor as well for Man City is Laporte is suspended, got sent off in the last game. John Stones will probably come in. And John Stones is one of them.
Yeah, he needed a game. He scored the own goal today. Needed a game. Needed 90 minutes in his legs, you feel.
Yeah. So I'm assuming he'll start centre-back. I just think without Varane, you know what? If Varane would have been fit, Rob, and we'd have seen a similar lineup to last weekend against Spurs, I think I would have tipped him United.
Yeah,
I would fancy him. But now, given the changes back there and Maguire not playing great, who knows where Pogba's going to be playing, if he's going to be playing in this game. I think you'd fancy City to find a way through with the odd goal.
Do you see a partner for Ronaldo with a two, Rob? Or do you see maybe three underneath him as the main man? Cavani, you know, I think got a bit of a knock at the weekend and was sub-Champions League. Would you see him going back to Cavani and Ronaldo with maybe Bruno being that assist underneath?
No, I don't. I think he will go for pace. I think Ronaldo and Cavani, when they are going to be seeing very little of the ball, when they win it in transition, they want some quick players. So maybe a Rashford, maybe a Greenwood. But this is where the different systems hard to get them all inside.
Yeah,
you know, you have to play slightly differently. Then you have to put Bruno into midfield to play Greenwood and Rashford and Ronaldo up front. You know, I don't know. I'll throw him back to you. Does he start Paul Pogba? If so, where?
Suspended, isn't he?
Paul Pogba?
Yeah, he got sent off, didn't he? Against Liverpool?
Oh, he did. Sorry, you're absolutely right. Yes, he got sent off. Second game.
Yeah, second game of three. Second game suspension, yeah.
Right, okay. So he won't be playing. So it's been McFred. It'll be McFred in midfield.
McFred, which I think he would prefer to go with, to be honest. I think he'll go with McFred because of the opposition having so much ball. I think they're better set up. The two wing backs either side, based on, we don't know the three. Van der Beek came on, Rob, last 10 minutes or so at the weekend. Jadon Sancho came on last 10 minutes. I mean, all of a sudden, you know, that's a lot of money spent for two players who are not going to be part of your team when you need them. I mean, Sancho's got a bit of pace, can maybe offer something from a wide position. Feel less Van der Beek's going to be able to outlodge one of those midfield players or Bruno in that middle position. But, you know, at some point you think, well, he's got to give Sancho another dip at it, hasn't he?
I think off the bench. I think Van der Beek and Sancho. I mean, Sancho, again, tons of money, loads of money on a player that doesn't look like he's ready to be a consistent performer for the team. So Van der Beek and Sancho probably off the bench. I think it's kind of open. I think City are more grooved, more consistent. United have got some issues with some players suspended. Varane's a big miss. I think City can go there and win it narrowly.
Yeah, I just worry about Maguire's sort of mental state and his fitness at the moment, especially with Varane missing. I'm not sure which partner's going to have it. That's Bailly then. You know, I just think Varane gives him a bit of leadership and a little bit of calmness back there. So, it's a big one to call. It's going to be a big game at Old Trafford, 7 a.m. Eastern Time on NBCSN. We'll be ready for that one. Looking forward to it, my friend.
Yeah, I mean, I think in terms of, you know, it potentially title defining in some ways. Speaking of title defining competitions, the world's best thoroughbreds are heading to Del Mar, California for the Breeders' Cup World Championships. And I got to say, I went to Del Mar, California, your neck of the woods, in the summer. I watched some horse racing. What a lovely spot that is. What a lovely track. What a lovely little vibe in the Del Mar race circuit. I just had the best time. Anyway, they'll compete in 14 championship races worth $31 million in purses and awards.
You sound surprised that Del Mar in California is going to be so beautiful. And I'm also got a question to you. I mean, football, I suppose, is your number one. But then golf, racing, is there anything else you're not? Formula One, is there anything else you're not involved in?
Well, I happened to be in California and the racing was there. And I, you know what? I said to my wife, let's go and have a lovely little day out, put a few little bets on, a couple of, you know, cool drinks. It was quite the day. Horse racing's down the list for me, mate. It's all about golf and Formula One after football.
This is the big one as well, mate. Each racing season ends with just one finish line, the Breeders' Cup World Championships. It's the one event every horse, every jockey, every trainer, every owner across the globe has their sights on.
You can catch all the action live on November the 5th and 6th on NBC Sports.
So check out BreedersCup.com/2021 to learn more. So that's BreedersCup.com/2021 to learn more. Now let's move on to another thoroughbred who was in a two-horse race today against an Athletic team that we know are motivated or streetwise, or managed by a man with a real drive and enthusiasm to get the job done. But I know you were watching this game closely, my friend, and it looked like, to me, Liverpool put the fire out on Atleti.
Well, they did, but it took a bit of time. And I think the opening, I thought, and we'll go on, we did see a red card, we'll talk about it in a second, but it was physical, Rob. It was physical. Atletico Madrid wanted to disrupt Liverpool, of course, Anfield, big atmosphere. We know that between these two teams, no love lost, really. You know, they're very different. The managers are very different. There was a talk last time about Simeone never shakes hands with any manager, which I still think's like, what? What? Like, you know, who doesn't shake hands after a sporting match? So I can't stand that kind of philosophy from him. Joe Jota played up front, Rob. Mane to the left, Salah to the right. We had Henderson, Fabinho and Oxlade-Chamberlain, the extra guy in midfield. I always think Liverpool looked more solid when Fabinho was there. Henderson to the right hand side, another leader, runner, conscientious midfield player. Oxlade-Chamberlain, to be fair, had some good moments, Rob. It's not always been easy for him at Liverpool. Some good moments early on. He hurt himself a little bit in the second half. He got subbed out later on, but I thought he did okay. But Diogo Jota gets the first goal from a world-class cross from Trent Alexander-Arnold. I mean, what can you say? You're not surprised, Rob, when he, with that right foot, just how good he is with it, how accurate he is with it. I mean, a first-time ball, one of those sort of, you know, like, the type that, that Henderson tries to hit sometimes, the old first-time one in behind. It was a it was a beautiful cross. It bounced up. Jota goes in there where he wants to be behind the defenders, in between the goalkeeper and defenders. Again, a fantastic cross. He nods it in to, makes it, to make it 1-0. Sadio Mane scored after 21 minutes to make it 2-0. We had offside, I mean, goals disallowed. And then we had this red card. Felipe. So aggressive player, right through the centre of the pitch for Atletico Madrid. 37th minute. He stops the counter-attack, basically. In Liverpool's own half, Sadio Mane picks the ball up, runs away from Felipe, who deliberately brings him down, deliberately... He did have his foot up, his studs up, but it was a trip more than a hack or a real forceful challenge. And the referee blows a whistle, and everybody watching the game anywhere thinks, oh, yeah, definite yellow card. Yeah. He's stopping, you know, unsporting behavior. He's running away. Anyway, he tries to bring Felipe back to him to give him the yellow card. And he wouldn't really come back. So if referee gets closer and gets more angry and angry. Anyway, when he pulls out a card, it's a red card. It's a straight red, Rob. And I mentioned it on social media and people say, well, he, you know, one's for the tackle, one's for dissent, you know, talking back to ref, dissent or whatever. Mm-hmm. Well, that would be two yellows. It was a straight red. So straight red can only be for violent conduct, serious foul play. Foul and abusive language. Foul and abusive language. He might have said something. Abusive to the referee, red card, may have been that. I mean, there's also, and I mentioned it in the tweet that I put out there, that it kind of was a studs up trip, Rob. Again, no force. Yeah. It's not, I am not saying it's a red card for sure. Absolutely not. Yeah. But the referee might have seen that where his stud is up, the studs go into the back of his calf, his Achilles tendon, and it was a little bit endangering the safety, potentially. But again, nobody thought that. It's just a bit of a weird one. And to be fair, Atletico Madrid had a bit of a rally up, Rob. They had a bit of a rally up after that. They had a couple of little close calls, disallowed goal with Luis Suarez, deflected shot that was offside. But then a little later, it was easy. It was easy. And the game was pretty much done. There was situations where they could have scored more goals. But that was it. That was your story. The red card. And I wish we'd have seen it at halftime or afterwards to get a bit more sense of why that was given. We didn't get to see many replays. But it was a very comfortable day for Liverpool and top of the group, aren't they? 12 points.
Top of the point,
Porto on five. Atletico Madrid on fourth. And so the job done, top of the group, job done, well done. Can take it easy on match days, the remaining match days. So, yeah, pretty comfortable at the end where it could have been a really nasty, awkward, difficult night, but the red card changed everything. And that really did knock the stuffing out of the Atletico Madrid manager and players.
I did listen to the Jurgen Klopp interview after, and he said a couple of things that I thought were good. He said that, you know, they're more streetwise and will play a certain way. We have to play our game and play to our skill set. And he said, in the main, we did that, didn't get caught up in things. Talked about the referee and just said he felt he had to take Sadio Mane off, I think it was.
He had a yellow card.
He said, I just worried about the referee and that he might want to do something. It was a really good call. So it seems like, it was one of them where you're not quite sure with the referee. You talked about the challenge. He talked about, you know, whether it's a European view of those challenges. It's sometimes different from what we would see in the Premier League, and whether it's seen as more dangerous with the studs up. Obviously the man sent off changes things for Liverpool. But it looks like Liverpool are in good shape, Robin. As you were talking, and the Fabinhos, the Hendersons, the Van Dijks, I'll chuck the Milner in there in terms of dressing room and that. When we just spoke of Manchester United, you know, and I know it's not a direct comparison, but there's a different culture at Liverpool that if Paul Pogba was dropped into that culture, he'd be different because the dressing room's different, the people in are different, the voices in there are different. And that's something that Ollie's got to find in his Manchester United group, not just the football, not just the way of playing, not just the coaching, but the culture, where when you go in that team, there's a certain standard. And if you drop below that standard, doesn't matter who you are, what you've won or what salary you're on, you're going to get it like anybody else.
Who sets the culture at Liverpool?
Yeah. the manager. Obviously, it comes from the man who used to set it at United back in the day.
And it shouldn't be all about the manager, right? No, and of course, players got their own responsibility when they cross a white line, et cetera, cliche. But it does come from the gaffer, from the manager, and how he sets up training, what he lets you get away with during the week in match days. But no, you're absolutely right there, mate. The culture's a really good one. The fans are behind the team. Defensively, I was watching because they've been a little bit leaky, potentially leaky Liverpool. Yeah. Obviously, the Brighton game where they got played through a little bit and conceded the two goals. Yeah. No evidence of that. Again, 10 men helps, doesn't it? But that's the thing. Now, the weekend, Rob, they're at West Ham on Sunday.
Yeah, away at West Ham.
I mean, that after watching West Ham this last weekend, I couldn't be more impressed with it at the moment. That's a game. That's a
proper test now, isn't it? West Ham at London Stadium is now a proper test of the Premier League. And we haven't said that for a few years, you know, with West Ham sort of being up and down, didn't know what you get. This is a proper test now for Liverpool. And it was one of them, Rob. You wouldn't be that surprised if West Ham came away and won it.
Well, they're strong. They're strong. Mm-hmm. They won't give away much. All players work their socks off. All players. Benrahma, Bowen.
Yeah.
Antonio.
Fornals.
Yeah. Rice and Suchek. Tell me a better midfield pairing in the Premier League. There probably is one, but actually, I don't know if there is. Honestly.
Apart from the two Robbies, my friend.
The two Robbies. Great partnership. Yeah. So I love West Ham at the moment. And that's going to be a brilliant game. Of course, we'll report on that on our show on Sunday. Okay. Next game is Chelsea, my friend. I watched this one.
Yeah.
The Malmo Neil Chelsea won.
This one. Yeah. Yeah.
Ziyech got the goal, 56 minute.
A
couple of things to point out, but I'll let you go first.
Well, first of all, it's Chelsea do what they do well in a professional way. They got the job done. Clean sheet again. Professional in the way they went about their business. There's a lot of talk, and I was interested that Tuchel came out, and praised his number two. But I see it's Arno Michels, I believe. Who said to him in the second half about changing Hudson-Odoi and Ziyech. So Hudson-Odoi started underneath Havertz on the right,
left-hand side,
and Ziyech on the left. So they're sort of inverted number 10s playing underneath a main striker. Apparently, his assistant was watching the game and said, we'd be a bit better to put Hudson-Odoi on the right-hand side because his pace might get him down that left-hand side. And put Ziyech on the right. What happens? Hudson-Odoi makes a clever move, gets down on that left-hand side, plays a lovely ball into the far post, and who's there? Ziyech to score the goal. And Tuchel said, I've got to give credit to my assistant. Now, again, we don't have to want to make comparisons to it, but that's what a good number two should be doing to the manager all the time, Rob. Just giving him thoughts and have you thought about this looks... Now, the manager, in the end of the day, makes the call, and that doesn't happen if the manager doesn't want it to happen. But I think that's important that your backroom staff are challenging the guy who's there, because there's nothing worse sometimes than sitting on the sideline. I managed some reserve team football, nowhere near the pace, nowhere near the importance of Premier League. But I tell you what, when the game's going on, Rob, sometimes you get caught up in it and you're missing things. You don't see some of the things that are going on in the periphery.
It's interesting because Hudson-Odoi from the left-hand side where he started out, the theory is that you receive the ball, you come in on your strong foot and you shoot from inside, basically.
Yeah.
Same thing with Ziyech on the left-hand side. I guess if he's saying, you know what, they're pretty strong. Malmo are pretty strong in the middle. Maybe there's a little bit more vulnerability to the outside, and that doesn't suit those two players on their weaker foot. So there was a switch. Yeah, it was a brilliant ball in from Hudson-Odoi. Right foot, just bent it between the goalkeeper. A little bit different to Trent Alexander-Arnold's, but same kind of idea between defenders and goalkeeper. Ziyech's there for a simple tap-in. So... yeah, another player, Rob, I thought was interesting, me and you to have a little chat, is Ruben Loftus-Cheek. Started the game alongside Jorginho, he's kind of been on loan, he's had his injury issues. And I think we both agree, and most people in the game agree, that he's got, in terms of tools, I think you said it before.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got great physicality, he's well over 6 foot tall, he's built strong, great feet, good vision, I mean, can tackle. And what I'm going to say about him in this game, Rob, is that I saw something that I've not seen before, and that was a hustle, a close down, and then go again, and then make a tackle, and then jump up and go again. That's what he's got to do. As a central midfield player in this Thomas Tuchel side, you can't just rely on your feet or your ability to play a ball or getting forward into the box and getting ahead of which he can do. You've got to be a general. And that's what Kovacic's done so well. That's what Jorginho's done so well. Kante, of course, is that type of player. And he's not the same type of player as Loftus-Cheek. But Loftus-Cheek's got to be more of a general. And I saw it. You know, now whether this, I mean, in some ways, this is his last chance, isn't it, Robert? At the big time at Chelsea?
At this club, you feel. But people still tell me, and, you know, I've got people who are around the scene in London still tell me that I think Tuchel quite fancies him. I believe that Tuchel thinks he's a player in there. And that, you know, the size and the things he can do are game changers. Or, you know, a big midfield player in there with good feet who can go box to box, can make things happen. And as you say, will hustle. You know, Patrick Vieira was a beautifully technical footballer, but he didn't know hustle. He had an unbelievable way of fighting and winning for that ball and that fire in his belly.
Yeah.
And the Foots in the door, you can get a little bit of that in him. I mean, Chelsea have got a real fan. And it was interesting, Rob, because having looked at the team that was out there, I thought to myself, what Tuchel has got, whether he likes it or not, and I'm sure as a manager, it's the best thing. He's got real competition now. Alonso was in the fullback position, so Chilwell's been playing well, scoring goals. Azpilicueta came in at the right side instead of Reece James. You know, for Ziyech and Hudson-Odoi, it's minutes on the pitch. One made the goal, one scored the goal, but have got to keep playing well. Pulisic and Barkley came on, Rob. 15 minutes. Pulisic had a little run, goal offside. But, you know, you get in this Chelsea team now, you've got to perform and make the most of your opportunity. Because you've got to think, Kante, Kovacic, Lukaku, Mount and Werner are not involved in the team.
It's a great squad. It's a great squad. Kai Havertz, again, I like him as a number nine. I want to see more consistency and more drive and desire from him. But again, I always like to watch him playing up front. And, you know, going back to that, Rob, isn't it a nice team to come into if you are a Pulisic now or if you're a Loftus-Cheek? It's the stability, the foundation is rock solid, rock solid. You said it right at the start, Rob. Professional. They were comfortable. You know, there's other chances they should have taken, but this the foundation that he did from day one, from blimmin' day one, and we're going to go on to talk about Spurs next. I think Conte would do the same thing. Three at the back, here's the wing-backs, this is what we're going to do. There's a little bit of variety in midfield and up front, but this is going to be our foundation. And that's benefited every single player, because they ain't got to worry about doing extra stuff. I do my job well. I know that everybody else is going to do their job well, and that makes it easy for players. Christian Pulisic, finally playing again now. Got to stay fit. Got to keep knocking on the door. Again, it's like he's had it throughout his Chelsea career. He's got to kind of do it when he's got an opportunity to do it. He will get opportunities given the competitions that are in. But it is a great squad. And Pulisic being back is something a little different. Very different to Ziyech. Very different to Werner. Similar to Mount, I suppose, in some ways. With that, but probably better in terms of...
More change of pace, hasn't he? And change of pace. Taking people on inside the penalty.
Yeah. So that's good. That's good. Good look for Chelsea. And it was 1-0. It may be the most comfortable 1-0, Rob, I've seen for a long time. Really comfortable for Chelsea.
I think really it's just a win or draw now, isn't it, against Juve next time out. Guarantees a spot, I believe. Yeah, so Juventus.
Yeah, they're going to be fine.
Yeah, they'll be fine, Zenit 3.
At the theater, more than the movies come to life. Movie lovers march in and skip the line with digital tickets to the latest movies on the free Fandango app. Ready to grab some snacks.
Pick me!
And head to the best seats in the house for a night of romance, terror, and quality family screen time. Visit Fandango.com or download the app today for your ticket to the movies.
Let's move on to more domestic matters, my friend.
What a story.
There continues to be major stories in the Premier League, not least at Tottenham Hotspur. So I think before we last spoke, it was on the Sunday that there was a meeting between Daniel Levy, Paratici and the board, and that, you know, it looked like, and as I said, I couldn't see where Nuno goes from here. Where he went was to pick his check up and clear his desk. So Nuno was out. You got the sense that they weren't moving Nuno out without knowing the man they were going for. And it's obviously a relationship between Paratici and Antonio Conte from the Juventus days. That sort of took maybe just over 24 hours. The news was coming out and all of a sudden Spurs have on the second occasion, didn't get him in the summer, but on the second occasion, have got their man in Antonio Conte.
Yeah, just a quick line for Nuno, Rob, where, you can't blame Nuno for anything here. It's just, it was poor. It reflects worse on Daniel Levy than it does on Nuno. Just the whole hiring and firing. But you're absolutely right. You'd have to think. Conversations have been going on days, weeks, maybe even months, Rob. Maybe even months.
Yeah.
The Paratici was always trying to get him from the very first day he took over as director of football to this day that he's actually got him. So he's here now. Just wanted to get your reaction, Rob. We talked about it on the Monday show. I was in with Paul Burmeister, who was hosting Danny Higginbotham was in the in. And we had kind of differing views, really, different first reactions to it. And we'll get into some details, but I'm excited by it. I'm excited by it. I think it's what the club needs. I think the club absolutely right now needs a fire up its backside. Yeah. He wants to be shaken to the core, which is going to be. But Danny was just not so convinced about the fit, about the money that he's used before to be successful, that he's probably going to butt heads with Daniel Levy. That was more Danny's side of it. It was just a different take. And it's a take I've heard actually, you know, of course, in other circles in analysing this disappointment. Where do you sit?
He's not. I mean, if Mourinho was sort of an outlier from what you'd expect of a normal Spurs type manager, then Conte is right out there. And I think that's where some people think like that this ain't going to work. I think, and he's got an 18-month contract, which is really interesting. So I believe Thomas Tuchel came from PSG to Chelsea, same time, 18-month contract, which I think is perfect, by the way. Let's have a look at each other. He's going to have a look at the team. They're going to have a look at you.
Yeah.
We're not going to be wedded down a 4 or 5 year deal where if it starts going wrong, we're stuck and we've got big payments. And I think whatever happens, Rob, good, bad or indifferent with Antonio Conte, Spurs will be better for him being at the football club. Because guess what? Spurs have got a soft centre. And it's been there from the end of Pochettino. Mourinho tried to address it in his way and then turned to Mourinho's normal style. That couldn't do it. Nuno comes in and tries to do it in his way. Didn't have the backing, didn't have the clout, wasn't able to make the significant moves. This guy will come in and this football club will change. Let me tell you, this dressing room whenever he walked in yesterday has changed.
Yeah.
It's totally changed. All the banter, all the thing will change. He will change it, Rob. We've been in around dressing rooms where players can change things or managers. This guy will totally change for the better. This is now serious business. My worry is, and I know we'll talk about him spending money and whatever is, I saw Paratici did an interview today and said, like, we've got a lot of faith in the group that we've got and we think there's more can be done from them, which kind of tells you, I don't think they're going to give him a war chest, certainly in the early days. I think they feel that this group of players can be doing better set up, et cetera, et cetera. I worry for his back three. I worry that the back three that he's going to want and not in this football club.
No, one is.
There's not an Aspilicueta. There's not a Gary Cahill. There's not a John Terry.
There's not a Giorgio Chiellini or a Bazzali or a Bonucci that he's worked with before. Correct. Christian Romero. Christian Romero will be, obviously, the Italian connection, and it's a Paratici signing. I mean, I've got a predicted lineup in front of me here, and he's got Davinson Sanchez and Eric Dier. Now, in Eric Dier and in Ben Davis, Time's up, I'm afraid. I mean, he is going to want to change a lot of this team, Rob. But he is going to go in initially, and I've said the story on air on the weekend. I'll tell it again quickly right now. I watched one of Antonio Conte's first training sessions. Wow. I went to Raleigh, North Carolina. Juventus were playing a preseason friendly there. I was there commentating on the game for another network. And Paratici signed Antonio Conte in the May of 2011, I think it is.
2011,
Right, and this is the June. This is the June. So he's had a month in the job. I sat and watched training the day before at the training facility they used, and I watched for 40 minutes. I said it on air when the game was going on. I watched for 40 minutes, and I watched 40 minutes of shadow play. of shadow play. Mm. And for those who don't know what that is, it's basically the starting 11 on a full-size pitch with no opponents. Mm. So the goalkeeper, I think it was Buffon back then, rolls a ball out, goes into midfield. Okay, we want you to go to Lichtsteiner. Lichtsteiner, how about you at the striker? Drop it back, and then we go over there. And then you end up with a shot or a cross. All right, he goes back again. Okay, this time we're going to the left side, into Pirlo, into Marchisio, you know, into the striker, switch it over there, boom, boom, boom. Okay, for 40 minutes, solid. Mm. Setting patterns of play, basically.
Repetition,
muscle memory. I work on the game next day, Rob, in commentating. Mm. Obviously, from a great position, I'm like, in the game, I'm like, yeah, this is it. Saw it all yesterday. The team was already starting to find a groove, Rob. It kind of knew what it was doing, flicking the ball around corners and the player ready for it because they've done it. Lichtsteiner on his bike on the right-hand side, switch the ball over to him because they've done it, into Luca Toni, back in. It was. I mean, listen, it's nothing rocket science, nothing that others haven't done before, but that's what he's going to do. That, and did you read the Ashley Young quotes from his time at Inter Milan with Antonio Conte last season? Mm. They're going to run. He said the amount of running of the team and making them fitter and running harder and harder and harder until they can hardly flip and stay on the feet. That's what they've got coming up. So physical, fitter, groove system of play. That's what they're going to have immediately.
And some of these players are not going to be used to it, Rob.
Right.
Some of them are not going to have the belly for it. And the ones that won't, I'll tell you now, he'll shift you to the side.
Absolutely.
You want people with him because he's going to want people in games that are going to see things out for 90 minutes. He needs a structure in his team. He's already talked about, I think he's looking at players down the spine, and that's where, the January transfer window, he's got a couple of players, I believe, in Italy.
I think Frank Kessé's one, the Ivory Coast. He was in the Olympics. So I watched him closely there. AC Milan, good player, central midfield player, very, very good.
Obviously, he's got a great network and knowledge of the Italian game. But yeah, it's going to be interesting. And the other big thing, Rob, just quickly touching on is how's he deal with Harry Kane? How's he get the great goal scorer back on track?
Well, I reports and stuff. Apparently Harry Kane wants to stay. He's enthused. He's encouraged with the new manager, and maybe it's going to get him revved up again. You know, by the way, the last game against United, Rob, I was thinking like today. Maybe they already knew. Maybe they all already knew there was a change coming.
Nuno was going.
Yeah, Nuno's going. There's a new manager. I mean, listen, that's total ridiculous speculation from me. But sometimes this stuff just doesn't happen in the space of a few hours overnight. Mm. And I know I'm not saying that, but no, you're absolutely right. Dele. So Dele, as well as another player, and my understanding is that he's a brilliant athlete. That he can run up and down. He's one of the best in preseason. Yeah. Arturo Vidal type of player he is a player that I think Conte will love to use. Yeah. Will want to get the best of him. Of course, Kane as well. He's got Kane. He's got Lucas who can run. He's got Son. Pierre-Emile Højbjerg, Rob. Not a brilliant footballer, but kind of a Conte.
Solid,
he's a Conte type of player. Romero.
I think you like Skip.
Look, I think he'll like Skip. Sergio Reguilón on the left-hand side is more of a wing-back. It just is. Right wing back, Emerson Royal. I mean, maybe not that many expensive parts need to be brought in. And going back to the money side of it, Rob, and I did a ton of research and I looked back at his previous clubs. And yeah, he spent some money at Chelsea. I'm not sure that he spent the money, though. I think the club spent the money. They were going for a period of bringing lots of players in. Mm. And he fell out with Chelsea because he wanted to have more say in who comes in. So it's not as though he demanded money to be spent at Chelsea. They spent money, yes, and he used it pretty well. Juventus, he didn't. Juventus, when he turned that club around from nothing for a long period of time to winning the Scudetto, didn't spend much money. Inter, yes, on Eriksen and Lukaku. But again, he's more, for me, than a manager that only does well spending money.
How many
managers are out there, Rob, that have spent a ton of money and still don't win anything? He's more than a money spending coach for me. And that's why I'm excited. We're going to get answers, Robbie Earl.
We're going to find out about this group.
From the day
with Pochettino and this football club. And what they've got now, Rob, is a top six coach. we're going to find out if Spurs are a top six club. Because this guy will can drag you to
There's
that.
No excuses, mate. There's nothing else from us in the studio. I'm not sure if it's the players or the manager. We know it's not going to be the manager.
He's not Poch football, but he's Poch coach with silverware.
Yeah.
He's that caliber of
different
coach
level.
With silverware. So now, as you say, we're going to find out.
And also, Rob, last thing before I forget, just also in terms of money in that, national team of Italy, 2016 Euros.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did really well. Lost, I think, to Germany in the quarterfinals, I think on penalties. But did a great job. Nothing to do with money, international football. Yeah. So I think it's a... I mean, at the start, I thought, you know what? Yeah, maybe it's not a perfect kind of marriage. You know, Man United would have been an easier job for him. But I think it's going to be incredibly interesting. And it's going to be fun to see what they can do.
If he has a good 18... good first year, Manchester United might be knocking that door and looking to extend that contract. So let's wait and see in the move around. But yeah, looking forward to that one. Antonio Conte at Spurs. We'll get to find out a little bit about them. Just in closing, mate, we've got to talk about Unai Emery and the Newcastle job, because it was sort of reported and broke yesterday that Unai Emery was the number one target for Newcastle to lead them out with the new Saudi ownership, away from relegation and start the building blocks, I think, for this football club. And maybe against many people's thoughts, Unai Emery stated that he's 100% committed to Villarreal. He thought that he was grateful for the interest of a great club, but he's grateful to stay at the club that he's had. Got a good relationship with the club, apparently. His family are back in Villarreal. They're in the Champions League. I don't think he liked how this story was broke ahead of a Champions League game, and probably just looked at Newcastle and thought, is this what I need right now in my career? I mean, basically, he's going from a Champions League campaign to a relegation fight.
I hear you, but I'm still a bit surprised. A bit surprised. Hear you. Champions League football to a relegation fight, but isn't it appealing, Rob, in terms of a longer-term situation, the way the club could be going? I'm sure he'd back himself. He knows English football. I thought it was.
Yeah.
I didn't mind it. I thought it was a good shout, Unai Emery. He's proven himself. Yeah. He is a good manager, and we have since seen that Arsenal was a different Arsenal. It was a dying, a death Arsenal that he was in charge of. And Mikel Arteta, to be fair, had this huge transition he had to kind of perform. And now we're seeing a new Arsenal, which looks better.
Yeah.
So tough to really... I mean, at the time, it was like, wow, what is he doing with this Arsenal side? Yeah. But now we know that the team is pretty awful. I thought he would have gone for it. And I just wonder if he might regret it at some point in the future, Rob, that he could be managing an incredible club with amazing financial backing that he could have had an incredible adventure with. He's not decided to do it. I think it's a bit of a blow. I think of all the people out there, I kind of liked it as an appointment. So he turned it down. Looks like he's turned it down, which is still surprising. And that probably leaves Eddie Howe, Rob, isn't it? Is the last guy standing that probably will end up taking it. Again, which I don't mind. I like Eddie Howe a lot.
It seems to be, but very different in Howe and Emery. It's interesting, Rob, because you talked about, you were a little surprised and it's a great opportunity. Is it one he regrets? I think there's a slight reality with someone like Unai Emery, who probably knows it's a stepping stone. He's not the guy who's going to be
If he does well enough to pull him out of trouble and the fans like him, he gets some more money, they gradually improve the quality of the squad, I think he could have been there for a while.
Do you? I'm not sure he's the big global kind of a guy that this club will probably want. When you think of City end up with Pep, I'm not sure. And I don't know if he thinks he needs to go through that 2 years or 3 years build, how much that enhances his reputation. I don't know. You could be right. Listen, it's Newcastle, it's a lot of money. But it makes me think that this job might not quite be what everybody thought of when it first happened. Every week that this team continue to not win games, this team continue to fight relegation, Rob, if we get to Christmas and they're down there again, this might be a real fight to get in. You can bring in so many players at Christmas. You can work with the same group that you've got. And I had a little look. Let me tell you in December who they play. Leicester, Liverpool, Man City, Man United, and Everton in December before we get to the January window. This team might have another 5 or 6 points by then.
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously a short-term emergency situation going
Big
on right now.
Big Sam Allardyce, get him on the
phone.
Until the end of the season, keep you in the league, and then let's have some time to think about it.
I mean, there's going to be horrendous panic over the next few weeks, Rob. I mean, like with that fixture, the situation going on, they got to get a new manager in there, ASAP, Eddie Howe.
It's a risk, isn't it?
I think anybody's a risk. Anybody that's going to walk in that door is going to be a risk, because anybody who's kind of is standing is a load higher than that is not going to take it. So anybody who's going to take it, you're going to have a little bit of doubt, whether it's Unai Emery or it's going to Eddie Howe. Frank Lampard would have been a risk. Anybody's going to be a risk. So it's just they're going to have a very difficult few weeks and months trying to get out of relegation issue. The situation down there, because they have to stay in the league, and that's what makes it crazy interesting to see how they're going to do it. If you fancy it, again back to Unai Emery, if he's confident in himself, you know, it's a short term problem, yes, but the longer term potential, I'm a little surprised that he hasn't done it. Maybe they can resurrect it, but I don't think so.
They can get the dream team. Salah, Allardyce as manager. Tony Pulis as assistant.
Oh, God.
Neil Warnock as head coach.
Oh, brilliant. Perfect.
Yeah, you got
Chris Wilder. Chris Wilder, first team coach
or physio. I mean, you got it all there. Experience, know-how, stay in the league.
Lump it forward,
stay in the league, and then go on to your riches in your Champions League. Listen, mate, we've got to wrap it up there. A good old chat and a good week of Champions League football for the Premier team. Manchester City, Liverpool and Chelsea all win, and United grab a valuable duel courtesy of another rescue act from Ronaldo. We'll be back on Sunday, that's the 7th of November, and we'll look back at match week 11, review all those games, including the big one. Yeah, it's red v blue, it's United v City, it's the Manchester Derby. But for now, I'm El, he's Musty, together with the two Robbies. Thanks for watching and listening. Be safe, stay healthy. It's a good night for me.
And it's good night from him. Good night.
Good night.